Do you want a politically incorrect gateway to a real history education? Then go to McClanahanAcademy.com. That's McClanahanAcademy.com. The Brian McClanahan Show, episode 144.
Are you ready to think locally and act locally? Welcome to the Brian McClanahan Show.
Welcome back to the Brian McClanahan Show. Glad to have you back on the program. Before we get started, just want to remind you that you can follow me on Twitter at Brian McClanahan. You can like me on Facebook at Brian McClanahan. And you can subscribe to my YouTube page at Brian McClanahan, where you can watch this podcast. So go on out and do that. If you don't want to look for all those things, just go on out to my webpage, brianmcclanahan.com. At the top of the page, you'll find all my social media buttons. Go ahead and click on those. It'll take you right to my accounts. And while you're there, give me an email address, and I will give you a free ebook, Forgotten Founders, and a free audiobook of the same title read by yours truly. You can also support The Brian McClanahan Show by going to brianmcclanahan.com/support. You can throw a few pennies my way, help keep the lights on, help keep the podcast going. Also, if you want to support The Brian McClanahan Show, go to mcclanahanacademy.com. It's always free to join, and those who do join the Academy will get notifications of any deals that I'll offer, any special offers. I do have some material that will be upcoming within the next few months, hopefully. And so you'll get the announcement first, and you'll have an opportunity to purchase at a lower price. So go to McClanahanAcademy.com, register there. You can also purchase my course on secession or on Alexander Hamilton. So all that's out there. And if you do like this podcast, please go out to iTunes and leave a review. The more reviews, the better. So please help me out that way as well. Coming at you today with no chapstick. So, I'm chapstick free on this podcast. But I do want to talk about the State of Union Address, not the content of that, which lots of people have done and gone out and said, well, this is where it says, this is more conservative, this is more libertarian, whatever the case may be, this is more left-wing, whatever it is. I don't want to do all that. We've had plenty of pundits on TV talking about Trump's State of the Union Address and how his wife was actually protesting it and all this nonsense we get, the memes out there of certain individuals not playing with their dentures or falling asleep or stone-faced or playing, Candy Crush, whatever the case may be, and watching the State of the Union Address. It's just, it's actually funny. And one of the things that I'm going to talk about with Trump today is people are too tied into this thing, number one. But number two, it's the entire process of the State of the Union and the presidency in general that really is the problem in America. And this is one of the things I pointed out in my book, Nine Presidents Who Screwed Up America. The real problem with the State of the Union, the real problem with the way we view Trump, is that the American presidency is not an elected monarch. It's not supposed to be. It never was designed to be that way. We don't need to elevate the presidency to some type of monarchy, but essentially that's what we've done. And so we expect certain things out of the president, whether it's decorum, certain types of language, whatever the case may be. And I mean, it's fun to make fun of the seemingly debasement of the presidency, but maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's actually what America needs. We need to downgrade the office of the presidency. And this is what Jefferson said in 1801 when he assumed office. He was going to downgrade the office, and he did so. He did so in a number of important ways, but this is what we need to be talking about. So actually, I'm going to read some parts of an article today that was published in the American Conservative on January 24th. So the American Conservative used to be a really good magazine. Not so much anymore. Sometimes they have pretty good articles, and they still run material from Pat Buchanan, who actually was one of the founders of the American Conservative. I don't see eye to eye with Pat on everything, but he still has a lot of good things to say, particularly about foreign policy. And the American Conservative does put out a few good foreign policy pieces, but then they put out junk like this, which you wonder, and you look at this particular author's bio, and you wonder why they would publish this. And I think it's because there's a trend in quote-unquote conservatism to try to, what some are calling virtue signaling. We want to say, well, we're more virtuous than this. We're better than this. We don't like this gutter swine, Donald Trump. We just don't want to be part of that. And so we're going to show how much better we are than Donald Trump. But this particular piece by David Masiatra, entitled The Darker Implications of Trump's Vulgarity. Now, 2 years ago almost, in March of 2016, I wrote a piece for Breitbart entitled Elevating Public Discourse. You know, it's Trump's elevation of public discourse, because everyone talked about how Trump was vulgar, how he wasn't presidential. And so you watch the State of the Union, that's what people were looking for. They were looking for President Camacho to come out there and make this vulgar, fourth grade speech. Well, first of all, the educational level of the president's speeches has been going downhill since Calvin Coolidge, and that was on purpose. I mean, speeches now are written at an eighth grade level. Most material that's published for public consumption is written at an eighth grade level or ninth grade level, including essentially the last couple of books I wrote. Now, I mean, this is done on purpose, because if you're producing a book for mass consumption, you want more people to read it. And so you have to write to a level that most people can read comfortably at. And that's about the eighth or ninth grade level. And so people have actually said, well, I remember reading a Twitter exchange recently about my Hamilton book. And they looked at it and said, laugh, ha, ha, this is just awful. Look how silly this writing is. It's so, juvenile. No, it's not juvenile. I just write it at a level that people can read, because I want people to read the book. I could write academic stuff and make it to where nobody would want to read it, but that's not the point of writing a book now, is it? So certainly academic books, I could do that. And then you'd get about five people to read it. And that's fine. I mean, there's a place for that kind of material. But then there's also a place for mass market books. And so a speech, a presidential speech, is designed to be a mass market speech. And there's a couple of funny things in here that I laughed out loud when I read this piece, because the things that he said are just completely untrue. And he contradicts himself by saying a couple of things. So let me read some of this. I'm not going to read everything. Because I'm not, this is a G-rated podcast, so there's some language that's used in this I'm just not going to read. Maybe you're listening to this podcast with the kids in the car, or maybe you're listening to it with the kids around. I know people do that. I've had people say, my kids listen to your podcast, so I'm not going to read the language that's not suitable for a G-rated podcast. But I am going to read, it's not a long piece, so let's get started. And David Masiatra, The Darker Implications of Trump's Vulgarity. Words matter more than actions. Right there. Are we on the playground? Are we kindergartners? Your words hurt me. Oh, sticks. Oh, your words hurt me so badly. Don't say anything bad. That right there is what's wrong with America. That is Snowflake 101. Words matter more than actions. Seriously, this is in the American Conservative. Which is why Aristotle defined virtue as habitual action. Yet modern politics has reversed the Athenian conventional wisdom regarding sticks and stones and cheap talk. One of the traits of effective American leaders, argues the presidential historian Richard Reeves, is the realization that it is impossible to govern a nation as large and diverse as the United States with actions, especially when the branches of government are under the control of different parties. It is with words that a president must govern. I mean, come on. First of all, okay, a nation, we're not a nation. The United States is not a nation. It's a federal republic where the real action, the real rubber hits the roads at the state and local level. And this is Think Locally, Act Locally 101. So right away, Masiatra is completely oblivious to the American founding and the American Federal Republic. And somehow he thinks that the president governs with words. The president, and how does the president govern? I mean, he's not chief legislator. He has hold over foreign policy, and of course he can lead. So I guess you could say, well, words matter, but action actually matters more than that, because what the president does to govern is action, not words. This is ridiculous. Again, Snowflake 101, Masiatra is already just completely in left field here. During the 2016 presidential election, critics of Donald Trump, along with his opponent Hillary Clinton, often condemned him for his crudity. So already he's siding with the Never-Trumpers, which he obviously is, and Hillary Clinton. I mean, if you're going to side with Hillary Clinton, you're already... Well, particularly if anyone's seen this video that Hillary Clinton put out recently with the feminist groups. I mean, I'm not going to repeat what she said. Again, G-rated podcast, but I mean, come on. Ridiculous. Threatening to turn the nation's political discourse into a transcript of Beavis and Butthead. He said Trump made terrible statements about Megyn Kelly and other things. And Trump's most fervent supporters, according to many journalists, emulated their idol's example by transforming his rallies into professional wrestling extravaganzas, chanting CNN sucks, wearing T-shirts with repulsively misogynistic phrases on them, and finding perverse pleasure in shocking their better-mannered compatriots. So obviously, Masiatra is one of these better-mannered compatriots. I'm going to be a better-mannered compatriot. I can't use any of this. Trump is dragging everyone into the gutter. A common and commonly nauseating defense of Trump's vulgar behavior was to deflect away from the words and actions themselves with accusations of elitism against his critics. It's nauseating. So what I just did was nauseating. They just don't like Trump because he is crude, and they just don't like the way he says things were common refrains for, ironically enough, many conservatives who in any other circumstance would have been aghast at such bad language. Come on. Give me a break. And particularly one of the examples, a couple of the examples he's going to use later on in the piece. I mean, it's just hilarious. None of this decline was unpredictable, he says. Historian and social critic Morris Berman wrote a trilogy on this very subject, and in the first book, The Twilight of American Culture, published in 2000, he observed a general coarsening of American life, found in politics and entertainment, and also in how private citizens relate to one another. Although not a factor in Berman's book, social media often favors those who can communicate in slick and snarky slogans and transform even mild disagreements into the rhetorical equivalent of a barroom brawl. It now appears that a significant minority of Americans prefer their leaders to speak and behave in ways that do not elevate their culture, but recreate and enhance its worst elements. Now, part of that is true. I mean, I think social media has created an environment where you don't really have public discourse that is elevated. I mean, you get these ridiculous arguments. And that's because of the anonymity of it. I mean, I'm not face-to-face with someone. So I would say things perhaps on social media that I would not say to someone's face, though this is not me personally talking, but other individuals who go on and would not have the guts to say some of the things they say on social media. But regardless, I mean, I think that is one valid point, but it really has nothing. Trump says these things to people's face. So it's not like he's doing this and he's trying to hide from it. As a consequence, the United States now has a president who reportedly denigrated Haiti and African nations. Many pundits and politicians. Now, first of all, the important thing about this is that was in private a private conversation. He didn't say this publicly. It was a private conversation. Many pundits and politicians have excoriated Trump for the implied racism of his remarks. Again, remember, this is in the American Conservative. It is important to note that he followed the insult by wondering aloud why America doesn't take more immigrants from Norway, while others have, with good reason, focused on the words of apparent ignorance. African immigrants, after all, have a higher college graduation rate and lower crime rate than the general population. But there's another element to what Trump said, one that's gotten too little attention. It's sheer vulgarity. Trump is certainly not the first president to speak with intemperate language. Lyndon Johnson's tongue was notorious, as was Andrew Jackson's. He even says President Obama used bad language. If reports about Trump's crude behavior are true, however, he made the statement in a context he knew would make his remark public. As Eric Erickson claims, he later called friends to boast about what he had done. Rumor has it that Trump wanted people to know what he said. First of all, if these countries were so great, I mean, I'll just say this. If these places were so great and what Trump said was incorrect, then why are people running to the gates to get here? I mean, they're chomping at the bit to come to the United States. If these places were so great, then why do all these people want to come to the United States? I mean, that's a real serious question. So denigrating, I mean, look, if they're so great, stay home. I mean, why are people coming to the United States if living in these places that Trump, said, made these comments about are wonderful, perfect socialist utopias? Because they're not. And that's the real important thing to get out of this. They're not. And what's also important to note is that when people do come from these places, the overall objective is votes. I mean, this is why the Democrats want them here. It's votes, and they are turning places like California into the places where they're coming from. I mean, California is becoming a third world country very quickly, particularly Southern California. And so, I mean, is this what we want here in the United States? Do we want to the United States? I mean, this is what people were asking back in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, too, when people were coming from Europe, these very poor parts of Europe, Eastern Europe and other places. Do we want the United States to become a third world country? The ill effects of public vulgarity aren't as evident as those of bad policy or failures of diplomacy, but they still degrade the American experience, making the general culture less habitable, less enjoyable, and even less beautiful. Again, how so? Right? I mean, if you go back and I'm going to give you the examples he gives. It's so funny. I laughed out loud. Ralph Ellison wrote that one of his goals as an artist and novelist was to endow inarticulate characters, scenes, and social processes with eloquence. The essentiality of eloquence is indisputable because the interests of art and democracy converge at the point of articulation. Art and democracy. Now, democracy has often been called vulgar. And so itself, you know, to say that art and democracy are one, I mean, this is funny. The development of conscious, articulate citizens is an established goal of democracy. It is? Ellison explains, and the creation of conscious, articulate characters is indispensable to the creation of resonant, compositional centers through which an organic consistency can be achieved in the fashioning of fictional forms. Literature is what Ellison calls a symbolic action, a game of as if. But like politics at its best, it is also a thrust toward the human ideal. So here is the problem. You know, politics is not idealism. Politics is reality. Eloquence expresses the ideal while vulgarity violates. I mean, this is just academic nonsense. But that's where, obviously, Masiatra is living, in idealism, which is a problem in and of itself. The president is the ideal of the monarchy. I mean, look at what it does. It is not designed that way at all. This is what Jefferson was trying to tear down. Most parents understand Ellison's wisdom as part of their daily routine. I grew up in a middle-class home in the suburbs. As a small child, I once called a classmate's home on the proverbial wrong side of the tracks a dump. My mother and father came down on me with swift and severe punishment, making it clear that mockery of another person's home was morally intolerable. So already he's virtue signaling there. Now we have a president who talks that way, who not only speaks at the level of a fourth grader, as many linguists have claimed, but uses language that no good teacher would permit in a fourth grade classroom. So Trump is just in the fourth. But again, we're at a point where he's talking about kindergarten nonsense. You know, you're going to hurt me with your words. Don't be mean to me. Don't be mean. Now here's where it gets really funny. Eloquence was essential to the progression of American history. Really? And through various social and political crises, the maintenance of democracy. Now, that statement in and of itself is absolutely hilarious to me. Eloquence was essential to the progression of American history. Progression of American history. That's, I mean, speaking like a good progressive. And if this guy is a progressive. He's a progressive. There's no doubt about it. I mean, this is where I called a self-identified conservative a liberal in my Hamilton book, and this particular self-identified conservative couldn't stand it. I mean, this is where you should read what I wrote. I have. Your foreign policy is progressive, which is why you're a progressive or a liberal. This is what you are. And so you can be a Hamilton lover all you want. You can admire George Washington. You can question whether Hamilton is a conservative in terms of the underpinnings, the constitutional underpinnings of the Federal Republic. He wasn't. He's a monarchist, I guess, if you want to call that conservatism. And some people do. I mean, this is what they say conservatism is. So in that way, when you know, this guy is not a conservative. You can say he is, but he's a progressive. He admits it. He's a progressive. The Civil War, this is where it gets really funny. The Civil War had Abraham Lincoln. Now, I don't think there's a Lincoln scholar out there who would say that Abraham Lincoln was not crude and vulgar. The man was a walking dirty joke behind the scenes. Maybe his speeches weren't that way. But even those were at to the lowest common denominator of the time. The Gettysburg Address, please. It's one of the most idiotic, stupid, baseless speeches that's ever been written. It's written for a second grader. This is why second graders have to recite it. I mean, it's just so stupid. This is his example? Abraham Lincoln, the guy who James Byard called an ordinary Western man, and by that slap, what he was saying is, Abraham Lincoln is crude and vulgar. He knows nothing, he said, of our political institutions. He's crude and vulgar. This is the guy that Masiatra picks to be the example of elevating public discourse? My gosh. The Great Depression and World War II had Franklin Roosevelt. His fireside chats, again, dumbing it down. A guy that was vulgar behind the scenes? Again, another one. The Civil Rights Movement had Martin Luther King. Here's another one. Michael King, a guy that was considered to be extremely vulgar in his personal life. I mean, there's information coming out on this all the time. In the Kennedy trove that was just released about King and what he was like behind the scenes and what people knew about King. This guy was extremely vulgar. Again, in his private life, you can say so that Masiatra is criticizing Trump for a comment made behind the scenes, not to the public. Now, it got out, and you can say, well, Trump wanted it to get out. How do we know that? This is just what people are saying. These are whispers behind the scenes. It's a hearsay. He said, she said. He made a private comment. Even the criticism of Obama, when he said Obama was used foul language. Behind the scenes, a private comment. Come on. Lyndon Johnson was making these things behind the scenes in telephone conversations, but he was very vulgar. Richard Nixon was. I mean, they all were. The Cold War had John F. Kennedy. Please, John F. Kennedy? Again, have you heard the private conversations with John F. Kennedy? This is ridiculous. Absolutely, 100% contradictory ridiculousness. All were superb speakers and used their words to rise to their respective moments, not to cuss out and demean those different from them. Again, is Masiatra a kindergartner? This is where, I mean, please, people. This is where conservatives, the Never Trumpers, all these people, they're just so sad. They really are. They're grasping at straws trying to find some way to attack Trump. And it's his vulgarity. Now, granted, Trump is pretty vulgar. We've had a lot of vulgar people in American history. You can go back to the 19th century, and I can guarantee you, you would not welcome these people into your home, most of them. Particularly in the middle of the 19th century. Stephen Douglas and Abraham Lincoln, it's often held up, here is a grand example of great public discourse, of these great debates between Douglas and Lincoln. Stephen Douglas of Illinois and Abraham Lincoln of Illinois were both vulgar, rude men. Stephen Douglas loved to chew tobacco. In fact, the entire United States, the political delegation, loved to chew tobacco back then. There used to be spittoons at every doorway, full of spit, as these guys would walk around spitting all over the place. They threatened each other in the halls of Congress with firearms. They made denigrating comments about each other all the time. To say these things is to have this romantic image of America that doesn't exist. And if you've ever really read the Lincoln-Douglas debates, The whole thing was debased into who was more of a racist or not. And it was to say, I'm more racist than you are, and that's a good thing. This is what they were doing at the time. So, is that elevating public discourse? Or we look back at that, this guy's actually going to say Lincoln was elevating public discourse. He was. He was consistently trying to prove he was a racist in the Lincoln-Douglas debates. And Douglas was making all kinds of nasty verbal attacks on Lincoln of the same thing. You look at the Republican Party and some of the things they said back in the 1850s, how they could out-racist the Democrats. This is what they were trying to do. So is this, in 21st century language, is this elevating public discourse? This is how ridiculously stupid people like Masiatra really are. And they don't understand history at all. The present crisis is not as immediate or potentially fatal as the ones above. Immediate or potentially fatal. But it is still urgent. It is the combination of widespread mistrust in public institutions. Good! I remember years ago, I used to joke with a friend of mine that if you were ever elected president, you want to make it President Camacho. You want to make it to where people have no faith in the executive branch anymore because you're not supposed to. Maybe this is Trump's design to degrade the office to a point where people put more faith. I mean, I don't think he's being this, he's not this Machiavellian, but to make it to where people have no faith in the office of the presidency anymore because he wants people to focus on the state and local level. Now, Trump's actions don't show that, but that's a good thing. It's a good thing. We don't need to have an elected king. And the slow surrender of civil society in American discourse. Communication, especially in political debate, has become immature, mean-spirited, and shallow. Again, obviously Masiatra has not read the newspapers of the 19th century, the discourse of the 19th century. And some of the things that were said. Look, even in the presidential election between Jackson and Adams, this was one of the worst, most vulgar campaigns you'd ever read. Some of the things people said about each other, it's extremely vulgar. Tantrums seem more prevalent than arguments. Again, read your presidential history, Masiatra. And the role of leadership is a president whose language cannot possibly elevate the ceiling of human ambition. In fact, it can only cause a collapse. Much of the public seems fine with that. So David Masiatra, follow him at davidmasiatra.com, is the author of four books, including Mellencamp, American Troubadour, and Barack Obama, Invisible Man. This is a really bad piece. And I mean, it's embarrassing that the American Conservative actually ran it, but again, it's become par for the course. They publish a lot of bad stuff now. So when you look at the situation, again, having no historical context, having no understanding for the 19th century and how vulgar the 19th century really was in America, even the 20th century, how vulgar it's always been. Americans, this is one of the main critiques of American society, was that it was vulgar. It wasn't some type of elevated public discourse. It was vulgar. People pointed that out all the time. So to say that somehow America is this place that we shouldn't have vulgarity, behind the scenes in particular, and when you look at Trump's State of the Union address, the tone of that was not vulgar at all. The response was, I think. The response to Trump's State of the Union address and the things that the pundits were saying was extremely vulgar at times. And not elevating public discourse. They're cheap shots. So Trump is responding in kind. When I wrote the piece, Trump is elevating public discourse. I mean, I brought this up in that particular piece. How people just want someone to fight back. People want the right to stop killing with kindness. As I said in this piece, in contrast, the right is often killed with kindness. No one on the right wants to be accused of being a resolute partisan. It seems they don't have the moral high ground, so instead of they compromise, capitulate, play nice, and lose. Trump has changed that, which is why he's becoming a target. He is blunt, positive, and plain-spoken. This is refreshing, and people are realizing that the silent majority doesn't need to be silent, and it is still the majority. The politically correct cultural Marxists on both sides can't stand it. And this is exactly what Masiatra is playing. He's playing this game where just be kind. Just be kind to our adversaries, because these insults, this goes nowhere. If we just were nice to these people, it would be better for America. Being nice to the left brings us just a much more pleasant experience. Why? They're not. When you have Bernie Sanders get on TV and says, I can't believe that the President of the United States in the State of the Union address did not say anything about climate change. I mean, are these people going to play nice? Are they? I don't think so. So when Trump isn't playing nice, and you can say, well, he's debasing himself, going down to the gutter. What is being nice gotten anybody in American politics? And so I said in this piece, it must be asked, what has Trump said that is so racist or dangerous? I mean, and of course, Masiatra says, well, he said behind the scenes, this. History has better examples of both monikers. Perhaps one of the reasons Trump is doing so well is because both terms are losing their punch. They have been used so often in the last 20 years, but particularly in the last 8, that people are becoming immune to the insult. Everything is racist, even if it's not. We have made calling a criminal a racist epithet. This is truly Orwellian doublespeak. The real dangerous people have always been and still are those on the left, and they are losing their grip. That is why they rush the stage and why they threaten minority Trump supporters with violence or with Uncle Tom insults. As I said, perhaps making America great again is nothing more than making American public discourse free again and calling these people out for what they are. So this is where I think this situation is refreshing in a way, and where these people like Masiatra, these virtue-signaling conservatives, have really nothing to offer anymore. They need to be ignored in a lot of ways. And so I see it all the time on social media. Frankly, I'm not one for vulgarity at all, as my podcast proves. I'm not one who does that. But at the same time, people want someone who's going to fight back, and Trump has been providing that, which is completely refreshing in modern society, something that had been lacking for a very long time. I'll see you next time on The Brian McClanahan Show.